Hey all, before we get into this week's episode, I just wanted to take the opportunity to send out heaps of love to the whole Hottest 100s and 1000s community, because shit's weird. It's just weird. And however you're feeling about that is totally fine to feel, and whatever you're doing is a totally great choice. Go you. But if you are looking to connect with a few other people, we've set up a Discord server expressly for that purpose. If you don't know Discord, it's a really great program where you can basically get on and chat about anything you want, share pictures, share songs. As you can understand, there's been a lot of music chat going on there, a lot of chat about the podcast. They've had some listening parties for new episodes as they've been released. And then at lunchtime, we've just kind of been getting on and having a bit of a voice chat as well about whatever kind of comes to mind. It's just been a really great space for fans of the podcast and us to kind of get together and to hang out. And if it sounds like something that you'd like to do, well, probably the easiest way to get on board with that is to find us on whichever flavor of social media you prefer, whether that's Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook, and look for the link to the Discord there. You may have to download a program and set a few things up there, but it's easy. And if you got any problems with us, hit us up. We'll help you out with it. It'd be great to see you on there. It'd be great to hang out. And all right, let's talk about some music. Cool, and I'm going to start recording now, just in case Nathan says something else about bees. And then if he says something else about bees, then I got it on tape.
No repeat bits, Adam.
I said something else about bees. You're not going to say the waggle dance thing again, because we did that.
We did that shit.
You're telling me that bees don't have any more facts? You expect me to believe that? What about other insects? What about slugs?
Go, fools, and it's on once again for young and old. We are Hottest 100s and 1000s, and we have taken control of your radio station. This is the podcast in which we talk about the songs that have been deemed hot enough to be in the Triple J Hottest 100. My name is David James Young. I'm one of the four voices you're going to be hearing for the next hour or so. Joining me once again, Adam Buncher.
Yeah.
Nathan Harrison.
Hi.
Andrew McDonald.
Hey.
Sometimes you're fucking sad and that, and
are you sad in that?
Well, like sometimes.
No, but right. Is that why you were lacking in energy then? Like,
well, look, energy's a whole other thing. You've got things to do, places to be, and that.
It's true.
You've had a big day. That's what you're saying.
Always having big days, man. So many hours in them.
So many.
Count them if you wanted to.
370 fucking 600 minutes or whatever the fuck it is.
Putting in the fuck in there is really funny.
Just me in the production of Rent trying to remember specific
how many minutes.
What about fuck?
That was a major part of the musical. What about fuck?
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Rent. I love it. Like, one of my favorite things about musicals is you go and see them, and it's the opening number. And in every opening number of every musical, you know damn well what the name of the musical is, by the way, before you get there.
You bought a ticket.
You are aware of what the show is that you're seeing, and yet the opening number will still
say the name of
the show.
It's time for you to see 20 Tons of Barber on Fleet Street, the musical! 2020!
One day I'll be legally blind!
Hamilton.
Well, this is the room where it happens, and it is going to keep on happening right now. At number 55, this is REM with The Great Beyond.
Hottest 100s and 1000s. Hottest 100s and 1000s.
I've watched the stars fall silent from your eyes. All the sights that I have seen. Can't believe that I believed. I wish that you could see. There's a new planet in the solar system. There is nothing up my sleeve. I'm pushing an elephant up the stairs. I'm tossing up punchlines that were never
R.E.M. making their return to the Hot 100, coming in at number 55 in the countdown. That is The Great Beyond. That is a single taken from the soundtrack to the film Man on the Moon. Funnily enough, a movie which took its title from an R.E.M. song. So coming very, very full circle there. Of course, Man on the Moon depicting the late, great Andy Kaufman, starring Mr. Jim Carrey and previous entrant Courtney Love. In the liner notes for In Time, the best of R.E.M. from 1988 to 2003, Peter Buck talks about the challenge of coming at the life of Andy Kaufman from a different angle, because they'd literally already written Man on the Moon. Mm. When they were approached for it, they wanted to come at it from a unique angle, and that's what they do here. They kind of play with the surrealism of Andy Kaufman. They talk about the elements of his work that are at once joyous and confusing and confronting, and just everything that goes into what his life and his career was like. But like, even if you don't know that, I came to this song as a kid. I didn't see Man on the Moon as a kid, obviously, and I didn't know about Andy Kaufman as a kid, obviously. So I'm just coming to this as a new song from the band R.E.M. that I like, because I've heard Shiny Happy People and Orange Crush and Everybody Hurts and stuff like that. So I have no idea what any of these words actually mean. It's complete nonsense.
Goddamn
to me.
Elephant? What?
A bird?
Is this Sigur Rós?
I feel like this is a song that works on both of those levels. I feel like you can just appreciate this as a really, really beautiful pop song, whether it's the strummed acoustic guitar or Mike and Michael's harmonies or just the hookiness of it, or just the little percussive elements that come in and out and stuff like that, or the little like whirring synth lines that are really, really nice. But yeah, if you know exactly what this song's about, who this song's about, the context in which it was written and all of that stuff, you can really, really dive in and really get a lot out of this song. This isn't on any of R.E.M.'s albums. Like, it's one of their few, like, proper standalone singles. And I also mean that not only in a literal sense, but also in the sense that this is a standalone song in R.E.M.'s history. It doesn't sound like anything on Up. It doesn't sound like anything on the next album, which was Reveal. It's just a very separate entity in the career of R.E.M. And I love coming back to it because like it just fascinates me from a songwriting perspective. Like it's just a really complex and beautiful, but also just super, super catchy and enjoyable song. I know all of you guys have various relations with R.E.M. It's been pretty well documented that they are my favorite band. Funny story, when I was in Canberra for a show pretty recently, about a month or so ago, someone I didn't know came up to me as we were leaving the show and was like, "Hey man, this is going to sound weird, but are you the guy from Hottest 100s and Thousands?" And I'm like,
"No.
Yes.
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not.
You'll never catch me alive.
Yeah, no way. Get fucked. Fuck off." Yeah. But I was like, "Yeah, how do you know that?" And he's like, "Well, two reasons.
My name is Michael Stipe."
And then I shook it, yeah. So the dude was just like, "Well, I put two and two together because I recognized your voice and I realized you were wearing an R.E.M. shirt." Huh. And I'm like, "Oh, David's the one that always goes on about R.E.M., so it must be him." And I'm like, "That's insane, but thank you for listening."
Five stars.
Five stars.
Michael Stipe being like, "I have a correction. You're actually meant to pronounce the dots in R.E.M. So if you could start doing that."
Just, yeah, that's how it's done. Can we circle back briefly?
Yeah.
Andy Kaufman.
Oh, well, Adam, why not just check out the episode in season one of this podcast where we talked about Man on the Moon? And I'm sure we talked about Andy Kaufman then. We must have done.
Did we?
We couldn't not talk about Man on the Moon. And didn't we?
Well, I mean, that's a great suggestion, Nathan, and I thank you very much for making it. But in the here and now, I'm just dang curious to know right now. Because the Wikipedia entry for Andy Kaufman and whatever is obviously where I went and started, and I feel like something gets missed there because he's clearly this really big and very important figure, because his legend and whatever is kind of precedes him so, so much. R.E.M. wrote two songs about him.
Well, like,
two very
were they
good
friends?
Songs.
Were Michael and he?
I think they were just fans
of
him.
Yeah.
But this is what I kind of want to know. It's like, what is it about Andy Kaufman? Like,
he changed the idea of what comedy could be. Like anything
that's older, it ages in a particular way. And comedy and horror are the two genres of performance that age the worst, because they both react to the societal norms in which they're in, kind of thing. And so some of the Andy Kaufman stuff now might not seem outrageously funny, but in the context of what it is, like there's a quote from some other comedian that said, Kaufman changed what comedy could be like. He showed the world that comedy could be more than that joke, like, take my wife, please.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
Great joke.
Yeah.
So, we all love that joke.
Who's on first? Great joke.
So it's like expanding it to more of a meta level. Absolutely. Is like kind of the vibe that I kind of get.
His stuff is very funny for people who are in on the idea of what Andy Kaufman is. He has this one terrific routine where he was performing on as a guest comedian on a show, and he was like, getting the audience, he's like, all right, what I want you to do is to get some cling wrap and put it over your television screen and draw, like, on this area here, and like have some white lines appear, get a black marker and draw stairs. And he's like, and then I'll walk up the stairs, kind of thing. But he was doing that against a plain black background, and he instructed the viewers to use black texter. So, like, the joke was absolutely at the expense of the viewer, who's like, oh, I'm going to see him walk up the stairs that I drew, but it was black on black. When he was at his best, he'd made the kind of jokes that I love, where it's, you write it because you think it's funny. You're the one enjoying it the most.
Yeah.
And that's, he just changed what the
idea. I know a podcast like that.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like, yeah, so he just, like, was a really unique figure. It might not seem that bizarre now, particularly if you're a contemporary comedy appreciator kind of thing, and you know the comedy of people like, say, Tim and Eric, or like Nathan Fielder.
Yeah.
And, but like
Neil Hamburger,
like, their comedy is absolutely indebted to Kaufman. So
this strikes a chord with me, because it's kind of like as a theater student when you first learn about Bertolt Brecht.
It's exactly like that,
right? Because like Bertolt Brecht is regarded as this incredibly influential theater maker because he was the first person to really like break down the fourth wall and acknowledge the audience. But like, that's really hard to get when you first study him, because those techniques are so intrinsically a part of what theater is now and what performance is now and what media is now. Like, we all have that vocabulary in terms of watching it and understanding it.
Yeah.
So the idea that it had to be invented by someone is a hard one to kind of get your head around.
Well,
this makes sense to me.
The TV trope name for this is called Seinfeld Isn't Funny.
I was about thinking about that one. Yeah. And that's basically like explaining that Seinfeld,
if you didn't watch Seinfeld at the time, its influence on the entire sitcom genre has become so prevalent that if you do go back, you're like, I don't get the appeal. Every sitcom does this kind of chattiness kind of thing, but no one did it when Seinfeld was doing it. Even though I do think the show holds up all right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Okay.
Yeah.
So this song, though.
Yeah. I hadn't heard this song before, because I have seen Man on the Moon.
I'm not saying anything. I've gotten too much shit for overreacting in the past, but like...
You having a time
right
now?
Dude!
Yeah.
I knew the song, not super well, but like I knew it enough.
I probably heard it because I've seen Man on the Moon.
Yeah, yeah.
But
okay, so I remember this song from being a kid. And I didn't
what
have...
What the fuck? Am I the idiot?
No. I think it's entire... Like, when you're 10 years old, it's just kind of like, it's luck. What songs you hear and what songs you get into is, I think, entirely luck-based in general, because I don't think music has like happened for the grand majority of people in any kind of significant way. When you are 10 years old, David has a superhero origin story where he was born into this destiny, and so obviously is different.
He was Bane. You're Bane. I was born into the music.
Yeah, quite literally.
This happened to be one of the ones that kind of stuck for me at that age. I remember hearing it when I was younger, and again, like, I was a kid who was all wrapped up in my imagination. I spent very little time in the real world when I was young. This song captured me. And I think, like, what I was picking up on is just, like, how this song... really being called The Great Beyond and referencing Andy Kaufman or whatever is just kind of pointing to these ideas of the unknowable, the ineffable and whatever, and how art really can be the thing, whether it be Andy Kaufman's art or this song, that points towards those things and allows us to think about them. And I think the joke of it all is that thinking ultimately comes to nothing, but it's the journey of thinking and allowing your mind to go to those places that is the magic of it. It's like, yeah, sure, like, it's all a ruse, it's all a game, there's nothing really behind it, these large, grand philosophical ideas that we come up with, but thinking about them is the value in itself. I think that's what's really in this song. They've said that it's about the idea of attempting the impossible.
Mm.
Yeah. Which is where lines like "I'm pushing an elephant up the stairs" come from.
Exactly. All these metaphors that are really kind of like trying to put that there.
That's again something they get into in the liner notes of "Part Lies, Part Heart, Part Truth, Part Garbage."
Yeah.
Like they kind of get into the analytics of like some of the key points of like the lyrics and stuff like that. It's especially interesting because Michael Stipe, for a very long time, refused to have lyrics printed in REM albums.
Mm.
Like he was very which is really interesting because like especially those early few REM records, I don't know if you've any heard much 80s REM, but a lot of it sounds like this. And you're sitting there going, what?
Well, I think that's probably by design, though.
Yeah, intentionally.
In the same way that like I know the Cocteau Twins actually sing in gibberish for a fair amount, but like the Cocteau Twins also don't print their lyrics and say,
yeah. Like, so it wasn't until Up.
Great film. Cry every time.
It's okay.
You fucking monster.
It's real King Crimson syndrome.
The start's perfect. Yeah. Then the talking dog's dumb. I'm sorry, Doug.
All right. Okay.
All right,
the build up was good for the payoff.
Yeah.
Far out.
It's interesting to like have Michael like on record talking about his lyrics a bit more because for a long time there wasn't much open access to his lyrics and you know you couldn't really comb over what he was saying, so this compilation Part Lies, this came out at the tail end of their career. So it was 2011. They just announced they were splitting up. They put out their final album Collapse Into Now, and so they'd put out this thing alongside with it, and so there were liner notes from each of the bands talking about it, like a bunch of the songs in particular. And so this was the first time for a lot of these songs that Michael had really, really kind of opened up. And so purely from a fan perspective, like I love that package and I love that compilation because I love just going through and like seeing them talk about it. On In Time, it was only Peter, the band's guitarist, Peter Buck, that was doing the liner notes and like talking about each song. So he's coming at it from a very musical perspective. Like, you know, he talks about playing banjo and he talks about playing mandolin, obviously on Losing My Religion and stuff like that. But on this, it's all three of them. So you get insight to everything. And like, as a diehard REM fan, like that's good gear. You know what I mean?
How thick was the liner notes? Jeez.
Small print.
Yeah. Really small. But I think the use of those other kind of instruments in here to create that kind of the aesthetic of mysticism is really kind of cool.
And there's a lot as well because like Andy Kaufman got lung cancer and died quite young. He was 35 and it was very surprising to everyone around because he didn't smoke or do anything like that. And so, you know, I think it caught him and his social circle off guard. But he tried a lot of traditional medicine and all sorts of things.
Yeah,
and
then, quote unquote alternative medicine.
Yeah. And then there's that line in the song where it's like, I can't believe I believed or whatever, which is potentially a bit of a, you know.
Whoa.
And there's a scene in Men on the Moon where he kind of
realizes
that all these things he's doing is just like bunk or whatever, which is very sad.
Yeah. And there was a long-standing kind of conspiracy kind of thing that he had faked his death because he had joked about doing that for a number of years.
Yeah.
What strikes me the most about this song that is most affecting to me is it's super based that REM wrote one song about Andy Kaufman and the makers of this film or whoever teed it up.
I don't know if you guys picked up on it, but there are like backing vocals in the final chorus where they lift lines from Man on the Moon, like the song Man on the Moon, and they use them as backing vocals.
Oh, that's cool.
Very cool.
Yeah.
I wasn't aware of that. So it's like deeply tied into the film, which is named after one of their songs, and they've been asked to do another song about this person and whatever.
Yeah.
That's really cool in itself. They've actually described the process as being a bit of a stab at their ashes to ashes in the same way that David Bowie revisited one of his most famous characters in song.
Mm.
They kind of did the same thing. But
that's cool.
It just shows so much love for me for this person that they were able to look at his work and his life and to extrapolate these grand themes or these metaphors out of it and to get two songs worth of material there.
Yeah.
Like to witness
I hope my life is worth at least two songs.
The love that displays is just really fucking touching.
Mm. Yeah.
It's cool.
connecting this back to Man on the Moon again, there are a lot of musical key points that make it a spiritual successor as well. So although Man on the Moon is in the key of G, the verses are in, they go from C major to D major. And the melody, for the most part, in the verses is da 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 da. And so they repeat that melody in bits of the verses of The Great Beyond, which is also going from C major to D major. Mm. It follows almost the exact same melody and cadence, etc. Seeing those similarities and seeing the way that they kind of bridge the gap between those two songs, not only lyrically, but also musically, is so, so, so cool.
This is just absolutely beautiful. Michael is just an untouchably wonderful lyricist and a great singer, and the band know exactly how to do that kind of soft quasi-acoustic college radio rock sound so well. I understand why this wouldn't be on an album, because they wrote it just for this particular project, but like, it feels like it's like, man, this is what they're making for not their own records, and it's this good. They're just terrific songwriters and they just write terrific songs, so of course it's a terrific song.
Like, absolutely.
I knew the song, but probably not like that well, but I just like, this last week, I've listened to it so much and just, I really feel like I had a very strong reaction to it, just in terms of like, based on Andy Kaufman or whatever, but it's a song about like sort of moving absurdly through a world that is absurd, and not in like a flippant way, but just in a like...
In a Camus way.
In a Camus way, exactly. And in a way that like the goals are unattainable and unreachable or whatever.
But it's absolutely worth striving for the impossible.
You have to... Yeah, exactly. You have to do it and you have to like push... You have to push an elephant up the stairs or whatever, but there's a beauty in that struggle or whatever. There's something quite comforting, I think, about that song right now, especially with everything that's happening and not just like, you know, in the last month or two, but like... It feels like a good song for where everything's at, certainly where I'm at the moment. And yeah, I've found a lot of like comfort and strength in the song.
The video for it is also very good as well.
Oh, and,
like you see like screens and televisions of REM performing for like a studio audience kind of thing like that. Like they're given their cue and then like Michael starts really performing kind of thing. And then they realize that they're on screens and they punch the screen and break their way through kind of thing in a fourth wall breaky thing, of course, Kaufman-esque. Like it's very just like that. They have a lot of fun in the video, and it's just another way that they clearly admired Kaufman himself. It's just, it's wonderful.
Yeah.
It's a song that's indebted with hope, but like accepts a kind of melancholy in itsness. Yeah. I don't know. It's very lovely.
It's a zoom out, right?
Yeah.
It's when you realize you're playing the game and then you go like, oh, it's a game.
It's a game.
It's a ride.
Yeah. It's a game.
And gamers for life.
Oh, God.
Gamers, rise up, baby.
Rise up.
Sit down.
At number 54, this is Blink-182 with Man Overboard. Coming in. Oh, sorry, I'm out of breath because I was just air drumming to
that's
that.
Why you're so sweaty.
I was watching Cops. Blink-182 coming in at number 54 in the 2000 Hottest 100. That is a song called Man Overboard. You can find it at the end of their much-loved and acclaimed live album, The Mark, Tom, and Travis Show.
The Enema Strikes Back.
Fucking right. Am I funny or what? Legit, one of my all-time favorite live albums. They made one new studio recording for it, and this was it.
Kind of a weird move. I don't think I've ever heard of that happening in any other occasion.
Yeah, no, it's a strange one.
You're promoting a live album, and you release a new recorded song for
I feel like I've heard of bands debuting songs on a live album.
Yeah, tons of bands.
But are they live versions?
Yeah.
See, this is, I don't know, it seems really weird to me.
It feels very bonus track, like Japanese bonus track.
It feels very label mandated, hey guys, this will be a single and people will say, oh, a new Blink-182 song. I love Blink-182. And this is from their new album. I will buy that.
Hey, and we all did. Okay, fair enough. Five of us bought it and then the rest of us burnt it. Because it was paid $1
for the CD.
Yeah. Good times.
Hey, man, could you just, like, when you get a chance, give me that dollar for that CD?
I need it to buy Pokemon cards. Too real.
Carob buds.
Oh,
eucalyptus drops.
Love
chicken
it.
And corn roll.
Chicken in the corn.
Chicken rounder.
Pizza rounder.
Pizza
there we go. Rounder. We got some good shit. Mm.
Is there any other rounders? Or they just
not
the
that I can think of.
A cricket all rounder.
Can you?
Spin bowling. Sport head. No,
yeah, that's right.
Is it sport if you're just pegging rounders at people?
I don't know.
In the playground?
It sounds like Calvin ball, so yeah.
In last week's episode, we revealed that we assign songs to various people. And wouldn't you know it, Blink-182, Man Overboard, is Adam's song.
Hey!
Thank you and good night!
Within the first 20 seconds of this song, it's immediately clear this is one of the best Blink-182 songs that exists.
Yeah. Fuck, this is such a good song! Yeah.
This is such a good song.
It's way more, not just mature in the lyrics, but mature in how they composed it. The bass line obviously rules. Everything about the song,
everyone's triggered by that bass line because they definitely heard someone playing it very badly in high school.
Yeah, either that or motherfucking Carousel. Yeah. Oh, dude.
It's like if you're a dude with an acoustic guitar, you are immensely triggered by Taylor by Jack Johnson.
Yeah, that's it.
And if you're around anyone who played bass, then...
That was it.
Yeah.
Big time.
But everything about this is way more composed and aware of their abilities in any other Blink-182 song, mm-hmm. at least up until the self-titled record.
It's very like, oh, wait, are they trying now?
Yeah.
It's like everything great that Blink does is turned up to a 10 on this track. The melodies, I'm talking both musically and vocally, they are really leaning into their particular kind of melodies, which really suit their voice, that kind of drawn out, long, semi-whiny kind of thing, but it just works so very, very well for what they're doing here.
Yeah,
the harmonies.
And they know the strength that they're both different voices. They know when to use each one.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah. Like, even just in the very beginning, it's like there's so much more kind of line, and the way that's kind of delivered with so much behind it. And as you say, like a really mature take. This,
do you want to say what it's about?
Yeah, definitely. So this was about losing a friend through alcohol abuse, like not them passing away, but like.
Yeah.
The relationship just becoming untenable because you can't operate with them due to their abuse. And many people, it's not officially confirmed, but it's pretty much canon. That it was about their previous drummer, Scott Rayner, who we did talk about this last time we talked about Blink-182 because it was very much a part of Travis coming on board because Scott, he was getting a bit restless in the band. He wasn't happy about them signing to a major label. He was talking about wanting to go back to school. And then there was, of course, you know, like the alcohol abuse that was making it very hard to operate with him inside the band, both performatively and then just, you know, everything else you need to get done as a band. And
did we talk about the ankles last time? Because he like broke both his ankles when he was drunk and they had to record the previous album with him on crutches, which is not an ideal situation for a drummer to be in. Yeah.
No. But I think perhaps the reality of that situation is what lends the weight and the maturity to the lyrics because they're actually kind of beautiful. They're just coming straight from the heart and they're just telling it straight like it is. They're not trying to make it any prettier or more clever than it needs to be. It's just kind of like, you know, feeling the pain and sitting in it. It's not them saying, I guess this is growing up. It's them actually growing up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because it's like, oh, part of growing up is dealing with this shit and this is the shit that makes you grow.
Yeah.
So about that. But I think it's like bitterly ironic that you're writing a song talking about your previous drummer and all the while you've got Travis Barker putting in so much fucking work this track. It's just like...
Yeah, obviously, like, he's objectively overrated, but you hear shit like this and you're like, fuck, he's good.
In this track, there's no way that he could be overrated. He's just...
Yeah, he's just, perfectly rated.
When it kicks into that half time...
Oh, man, it's so good.
Good Lord.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Just fucking beating that snare like it owes him money, man.
Es schmeckt.
Yeah.
Oh, so tight. One of the key kind of complaints and one of the valid criticisms, I feel, of the 2010s Blink output, so the reunion era records, is that they've really blended vocally a lot, whereas back in the day, you'd have a Mark song, you'd have a Tom song.
Right.
You know, one would kind of interject on the others occasionally, but for the most part, like, they were separate entities. And this was one of the first instances where they kind of blended a little bit. Right. And I think having that Venn diagram cross over just a little just makes this song extra, extra good. It's a Mark song. He's taking the lead vocal, but what Tom is doing to back it up is so good. Like, that complimentary hook over the "so sorry it's over" thing.
Yeah.
Is fantastic. Ugh. And then the little extra harmonies that he would throw in over Mark's vocals in the chorus bits, I feel it just works so, so well.
Yeah.
And it really showed, like, what the quote-unquote classic era of the band was capable of when they worked together. That was one of the problems with Neighborhoods. They literally weren't working together. That whole album was recorded in separate studios to one another. One would lay down their parts and then the other would lay down their parts, as opposed to back in the day when they were all together and they were all making it together. When you see them all just hanging out together and, like, being friends, like, this was their second chance, you know, after losing Scott. This is their second chance to really ramp things up again, and they did.
Mm.
You know, for 5 years there, they were the biggest band in the world. And they did it on the back of, to this day, the best stuff that they've ever put out. That run from Enema of the State, Mark, Tom, and Travis Show, Take Off Your Pants and Jacket, up to the Untitled record. Like, this era, they absolutely crack it.
I also think, like, this song works now in the current context of, like, emo coming back.
Mm-hmm.
Because emo, it's coming back.
But you know, the Family Guy of genres.
But it's like, you know, people are talking about and writing about and you know, revisiting all of this emo era stuff at the moment. And, like, I listen to this and I'm going, like, man, like, this is maybe a track that we need to bring back, because it fits in so, so well. Like, all the things that you want from that era of music or that genre of music are so present here. And, like, Blink-182 are always kind of like sideline emo band. Like, they're not the main force of it. But people sometimes throw them in with that crowd. And I think with a song like this, they 100% deserve to be thrown in.
Mm. Again, one of their most mature and I think one of their best songs. What undercuts it so, so, so poorly is the film clip where they have three people with dwarfism recreating a bunch of moments from their older videos. And lol, it's funny because they are small.
That's annoying.
So they truly cannot all be zingers.
I think they wanted to really just drive home, we're still Blink.
Yeah.
You know, like, we can do our serious songs, but yeah, we're still goofballs.
Yeah, and it sucks.
Yeah. Like, I'm just saying, it is what it is.
Yeah,
exactly. Like, if I was, God, what, they were like 22 or something when they made those videos. Like, if I was that age at that point, I was just like, yeah, fuck yeah, that's brilliant. Absolutely, we're doing that. I've no better ideas.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Masterstroke.
First prize.
This is genius.
Hang on, finally, let me put this cube down.
Great song, though.
Great song. Easily one of their best songs.
Yeah.
If not.
Yeah, man, for sure.
First time listen for me.
Yeah, mine too.
Because, like, again, I was only alongside Blink throughout the course of my life.
I'm such an asshole. I'm so sorry.
I'm just ignoring you.
Until
you can fucking behave yourself. All right?
All right.
It's wonderful, though.
Yeah, it's good. I found it. It's nice. It's whatever.
Imagine if this is, like, your first Blink song you hear, you're like, man,
I'm going to dive through their back catalog.
Yeah, yeah.
And number 53, this is The Hippos with a song called Wasting My Life.
Something in the way she never looks my way. I'm in love, I'm in love. Something in the way she doesn't hear a word I say. I'm in love, I'm in love. But people say we're not the same. She's out of my league, I'm insane. Am I wasting my life?
coming in at number 53 in the 2000 Hottest 100. That's a song called Wasting My Life.
Oh, Nathan, quick hippo fact.
Pink Sweat.
Huh?
Pink Sweat?
Their sweat is pink.
Is that a Nicki Minaj album?
Oh, oh, man, could be. No, that they.
I got an ass like a hippopotamus.
She does not deserve that slander.
Look, I'm wearing my Cardi B shirt right now. I got to roast Nicki. Yeah.
Holy
That's
shit.
That's a good fact. Mm.
Sorry, what was the fact? Nicki Minaj.
Hippo's sweat is pink.
Huh.
That's cool. Mm. My hippo fact is that their closest living relative is the whale.
Mm. That's still does my head in, man.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Also, they fucking kill people.
Yeah, very.
They will body a cunt.
Yeah. off.
They are way more dangerous than a rhino.
Way more dangerous than a rhino.
Well, in terms of how many people they kill.
In terms of aggression.
In terms of the kill count. Yeah,
they're aggressive.
It's like that scene in fucking
Snow Day.
No, yeah, in Snow Day, which this is real soundtrack hours. This is on the soundtrack for.
Just bring that one up now. This is from the Snow Day.
It
from
sure
Snow
is.
Day?
Snow Day soundtrack.
It's coming
I don't
back.
Know of this movie. Like I've read about it.
Yeah, I've read it. I've read about it.
It was just one of those like weekly movie, like family kids movies. I'm sure it's on fucking Disney Plus.
Well, we should watch it.
What were you saying about
our Patreon episode?
Sorry, what movie were you talking about, Ditch?
The Other Guys. From 2010, starring Will Ferrell and Mark Wahlberg, where Mark Wahlberg says, "It wouldn't matter if we weren't even in the same animal food chain. I would go out of my way to hunt you. If I were a lion and you were a tuna, I would swim out to the ocean and eat you."
That dialogue is so funny.
It's a very, very funny, like, scientific takedown of Mark Wahlberg's argument.
Well, it talks about tuna using snorkels, so I don't know whether it's scientific, per se. But let's see what you got going on there.
Yeah. Not all of it. It's a comedy movie at the end of the day. But
As was Snow Day.
Which is a movie about
About
a snow day and all the kids trying to like keep the school shut down or something.
Yeah.
But who plays the radio DJ in this small town in the film Snow Day? One Iggy Pop.
Oh shit!
Yeah.
I did not know that. I knew that Chevy Chase was in it.
Yeah, he's in it.
You read like what the synopsis is for the movie Snow Day.
I mean personally,
which I presume
you don't,
is rated G or PG.
Yeah, it's got
So like there's a snow day and then the kids are trying to make sure that it stays closed by like stopping a mechanical snowplow driver. And then you got this guy who's trying to like woo this girl, which is presumably why I think this song is included in the soundtrack to point towards that thread. And then at the same time, you have these two TV meteorologists who are facing off against one of them is Chevy Chase, who are facing off to like get the primo coverage of today's events. That was a movie. That's like an episode of TV now.
You could get away with that kind of shit, man. Those movies that just don't, like, don't make those movies anymore, thankfully.
Also on the soundtrack, Smash Mouth, Mighty Boss Tones, Sixpence, None the Richer.
Okay.
And this Foreigner. Is my shit.
So this is interesting.
I want to know what love is?
Yeah.
Fuck
no,
yeah.
Wait, sorry, Waiting for a Girl Like You.
Oh, true.
The other Foreigner song.
Yeah.
It's very interesting that they put both the Boss Tones and...
Tapping into that third wave ska.
And Smash Mouth, because like I immediately listen to this and I go like, I know who you're touring with.
Yeah.
And it's those two bands.
I know who I'm coming late for.
Oh, brutal. Like, what do we know about this band?
They are a third wave ska band from California. They put out three albums.
They did. And they were more ska-y previous to this. This was like when they discovered synthesizers. Because everyone was doing it. Everyone was finding synthesizers.
This was really their only single. Obviously launching off the catapult success of
Snow Day. This is not good, man.
It's not
very good.
I think the music's not the worst part.
No, the lyrics are the worst part, but the music's still crap.
Yeah.
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 It's like
the music is just kind of like subpar Smash Mouth.
Yes. Yo, it's just so soundtrack to a kid's film hours.
Yeah.
It just is. Don't get me wrong.
It's silly and catchy.
7 to 8 year olds, just within that window. 7 to 8 year olds need favorite bands too. So I'm not like
hippos. 7 to 8 year olds gonna love a band named the Hippos, right?
Well, this is the whole thing. It's just like,
are they a kid's band?
To paraphrase Mitch Hedberg, all music is kids' music if the kid can hear. Yeah. So just listen to Nick Cave, you fucking babies.
Get some Steve Reich into you.
Yeah.
Neutral Milk Hotel.
The conceit of the song being like, this girl doesn't like me. I mean, like...
Yeah, oh my God, and she's so out of my league, but I need to woo her, so I'm wasting my life.
There's
something
about the way she, like, doesn't look at me. Like, fuck off, dude. Just, like...
Grow up. Yeah. Log off.
Log off from romance. Mm.
This does implement one of my favorite time signatures, which is 6/4 in the chorus.
You love to count it.
Yeah.
The chorus is kind of catchy when it kicks in.
Yeah. It reminds me a lot of kind of like Cruel to Be Kind and like a lot of pop, like power pop kind of stuff.
All Star.
Yeah. Can't Get Enough of You, Baby. Like their cover of Q and the Mysterians, Can't Get Enough of You, Baby. That sort of stuff.
What's the other one that they did, the Smash Mouths?
I'm a Believer.
No, not. It was a pre.
Walking on the Sun?
That's the one.
It's like we've talked about at length how poorly songs about unrequited love from a male perspective have dated, that they do not look good in 2020's light.
And this is dweeby as opposed
to. But this is like intentionally dweeby, obnoxious, unrequited. Like, and
why would
like,
you write it?
Yeah.
Because why would you do that?
Because you're an obnoxious
to get on
dweeb.
A kid's soundtrack, obviously.
Yeah.
Don't teach the kids
because they think it's funny. And Yeah. Whatever. Mercifully, this is the only time we'll talk about the hippos. We might talk about hippos later.
I dare say we will.
Yeah. They're fun.
What is Chevy short for?
Chevenold.
Yeah. I think Chevy. Chevwood.
Chevwood.
Cornelius Crane Chase.
I thought it was Cornelius Cream.
Yeah, he's a dickhead.
Yeah, he does.
A cool fucking name, though.
Yeah.
Cornelius. Love Cornelius.
Would you make that trade?
What? To be.
Have a real cool name, but you're a dickhead.
I think I'm
Would you
there.
Rather?
Honestly, I'm
halfway there.
I'm not fully of the way there.
Where's
I'm
my like, cool name?
The world doesn't need another Smash Mouth.
No.
We've already got one. Hey now.
That'll do. Catch your hippos.
Number 52, it is 28 Days with Sucker. Straight out of Frankston, Victoria.
Go Dolphins!
You! Coming in at number 52 in the 2000 Hottest 100. That is the song Sucker.
That's the AFL team.
Yeah. Okay. It comes from their second EP. Here we go.
I looked it up. Because I wanted to just do that.
Because you knew I was going to bring up Franger.
I knew someone was going to bring up Frankston. I'd get an opportunity to go something. I might make it a thing. I might just every time...
What's
brought.
The local sporting team of every band we talk about?
Yeah. Yep.
Cool. I'm here for that.
I didn't do it for anyone else in this episode.
Well, it starts now.
I have to get on the way.
It has to start sometime.
Quick dolphin fact. They have sex for pleasure. They root for a fun time. Come on, dolphins.
Also, they can like rescue. They've rescued people as well. Yeah, that's a thing.
They've rescued people.
Yeah.
And there's that myth that went around that they just love fighting sharks and they just live for it.
Do they?
They just live for it.
I think they do fight sharks, but I don't think they live for it.
You come to my house, huh? Punching them in the nose. Yeah.
This is from, as you said, David, their second EP. Here we go. It's also on their second record, Up Style Down.
Yeah.
This kind of absolutely kind of exemplifies... 28 Days approach, right? Like punk rock riffs with like nu metal, white boy rapping, scritchy scratchy elements. Look, I don't think I have the fucking energy in me to really hate this. It's just a bummer, man. Like, it's just, I don't know. It's like all the ideas aren't terrible. There's some nice riffs going on in there. And I guess his flow isn't the worst flow I've ever heard. But
It's aged like fucking vinegar, man. Like, but does vinegar have a long shelf life or a short shelf life?
It's long.
Oh, well, then it's aged like milk, which I know ages quick.
Good one. Milk and vinegar.
The big two, baby. I call it a Milky V.
No!
No!
Absolutely not.
That's just curdled. Curdled milk, Andrew.
Maybe you put some balsam V. With your milk.
It's still going to curdle, dude.
If you drink it really quickly.
I'm not a scientist.
Will it still curdle if it's like a different milk? Like almond milk or something?
Shall we get our resident scientist, Paul Dempsey, to answer this question?
Let us know, Paul. How much milk should you consume with your balsamic vinegar for breakfast?
Probably not much.
Not much. Okay, but some.
Yeah.
Thanks,
so just
Paul.
Add a little. So a better way to do it, I guess, is just to add your milk to your bottle of balsam that you drink in the morning on your way to.
Add it to taste.
Yeah. And ingredients for a milky balsam V: balsamic vinegar, milk to taste. Yeah, this song's not great though.
No, it's very, very, very much of its time.
It's so fucking of its time.
What was
man.
The name of those jeans you were talking about Everlast
Jenkos.
Wearing? This is sentient Jenkos.
Yeah.
This is suburban Australian Limp Bizkit.
Yeah, basically.
It's like the one note I have.
It's a bit less like aggressive because it's a bit more melodic. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the Australian element to it. Instead of being that metal side of things, which doesn't really kind of belong quite as much in the Australian landscape at this time. Especially just in terms of just like general radio play.
I reckon so they're playing with like a resurgence. I reckon.
Who? 28 Days?
Yeah, I reckon coming people. Back. I guess I'm saying they're coming back. But I could see like Australian like internet culture being like, we're really into 28 Days again.
Well, maybe we're ushering in that era right now.
Oh, no.
Maybe.
I think the thing that stuck out the most for me is so there's a song by The Drugs called.
I was going to say The Drugs. Damn it, man. It's my fucking notes. As
there's
well.
A song called
Metal versus Hip Hop.
Metal versus Hip Hop, which is just about nu metal. And I'm not familiar with this song. I'm very familiar with The Drugs song from listening to that. And I was just like, oh my God, I did not realize how specific and pitch perfect the references in the music in that Drugs song were to songs like this.
So please! Stop!
There's a lot of precision going on.
Metal doesn't belong in hip-hop.
Yeah.
There's a lot of fine riffage going on. I think the band itself are in pretty good form, and the energy is just undeniable about the whole thing. Fuck me, there are some bizarre lyrics. Truly.
Yeah.
Even at the beginning, like the here we go fools, and it's on once again for young and old.
Well, you've already got me on the wrong fucking page here, calling me a fool.
Calling me a fool?
I'm the listener, please, Mr. Days.
February.
Some decorum, please.
Like I said before, you whore, we got the drop on you. You're through. So don't try and copy the style of those you chose to propose because you're sloppy. There's a noise at the front door, and last week you sounded just like Faith No More.
Is it weird
for
28 Days to rag on people for imitating other bands?
But like, also, if you say you sound like Faith No More, that's generally considered a compliment. Faith No More are a relatively beloved band.
But I think it's like the suckers are the ones who sound like Faith No More. This song is about the suckers, you see.
Right. Well, it sounds like he's addressing me, and it sounds a bit aggressive for my taste. I don't like being insulted like that. Also, whorephobic language. Grow up.
Yeah.
On the wrong side of history there, Mr. Days.
I like this of just bringing lyrics and then you're just kind of like...
Having, feeling insulted?
No, you're just having a little take.
Yeah.
No.
Just like on each individual line.
Well, shit.
Now you've got a new style, let me tell you right now, you're like a senile pedophile.
Ooh, see...
Because you want to rape the kids, but they won't pay you shit.
What?
Because you cut your hair when it was time to leave.
Well, see, that one started okay, because he said, now you've got a new style. I'm like, oh, maybe now he's going to reapproach how he's dealing with me and be like, look, I didn't like your old stuff, but you got a new style and I'm really happy with you. But then he goes on with this...
This pedophile stuff.
Comparison I won't dare to even mention. I'm above it.
That's the lyrics that I found for it, and like,
what in my ear?
It's mind-boggling, and it does match. Like listening to the song, that's what the lyrics would be.
Again, though, it feels weird that the song is ragging on other bands for like copying styles and following trends when they're just being a Frankston like.
Yeah,
I've checked several other different lyric sites, and yep.
Which one are you on right now?
AZ Lyrics.
Looks like AZ.
That's a you know, it's a solid one.
Genius said the same thing.
Metro Lyrics, also good.
I think that he has some anger issues that he needs to work through. I don't think he's truly upset with me as a person. I think he's just dealing with his own issues. Mm. Yeah.
Okay.
You're a pedophile, but they don't pay you for it or something?
Because you
know,
cut your hair? I don't know what's going on. There's too many ideas in that verse, Mr. Days.
Like, it's all well and good to have a lot of ideas, but sometimes less is more. Maybe just try it. Maybe start out with 2 days and see where you go from there.
See how you feel.
Because you started at 28 and you're clearly not fucking ready for a whole month. Do a weekend. See if you can get something down then. And then, maybe work up to a week, a fortnight. Yeah, then... Who knows? Maybe someday you'll even get to 29 days. It was leap year.
It'll be a leap year.
So they got the name from how long it takes to complete rehab, I believe. Oh. Yeah.
Oh, are they?
So Andrew's like, try it in a weekend.
Try. If you can't get clean in a weekend.
Now, because there was that movie 28 Days that came out with Sandra Bullock, and that's about her completing.
That's about as well.
Yeah. Right.
Fighting zombies.
I thought.
No, that's 28 Days later.
She thought those first 28 days were rough. Well, the next ones.
Yeah,
filled with zombies.
Oh man,
there's too much energy, and the riffs are kind of too
settle down.
No, and the riffs are kind of too fun to like for me to out and out like slam dunk it. And I can get how people would rally behind it.
What song have you slam dunked, Adam?
That U2 one.
Oh yeah.
Okay. Oh yeah.
That checks out.
And I'm not quite ready for that. Here, but there is a part of me that could easily fall into that zone, and there's also a part of me that could just like turn my brain off and just go like, "Yeah, it's fucking sick though." So I don't know. I think I'm like Andrew. I don't have the energy.
Yeah, but it is crap.
Yeah, but it's contextually crap.
It could be, it could be crap, and it could rule.
Like,
and both
if
of those
you
things
were,
could
if
happen.
You were the right age when this song came out, you would have nostalgia goggles.
Absolutely,
for it.
Absolutely, yeah,
yeah.
Like, I understand being backwater fucking outer city trash. I understand getting really into fucking, you know, rap and hip hop and rock and all that sort of shit and being like, yeah, man, fuck yeah, man. We're going to do this shit, man. It's going to be sick. We'll fucking put it over our skateboarding videos. It's going to be so sick, dude.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, you can't come to this sort of shit now and be like, well, yeah, actually, you know, it's not very appropriate to be talking like that. You know, it's just like... Yeah, of course not. You think
was it? I mean, like in 2000, was it okay to be calling someone a senile pedophile?
It was edgy and it was funny and it was cool,
it's pretty,
man.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. So. I'm just taken aback by the fact that it's there. That's all.
Yeah.
I'm just like, whoa.
It's hectic. Hey, you don't even realize when you're listening to
it. It's just hectic. Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
Look. I think it both sucks and rules.
Yeah. I'll say what they do here, they do way better. In later tracks that we're going to be talking about. Mm. It's not quite done yet.
Try a month with 31 days.
There we go.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is.
Maybe
not enough.
Maybe it needs more days.
Yeah, I haven't had this whole thing backwards.
Obviously.
Pull up that chart.
At number 51, this is The Offspring with Original Prankster.
Just call it early.
Fuck off. Offspring coming in at number 51 in the 2000 Hottest 100. That is the song Original Prankster. It comes from their album Conspiracy of One, and it features a dear, close, personal friend of Mr. Adam Bunch's. Because the man saying Original Prankster and Original Yeah in the song, in the chorus, is the Wu-Tang Clan's own... Red Man.
Well, he's not technically Wu-Tang. He's Wu-Tang affiliated.
The distancing.
He's friends of the Wu-Tang.
Whatever,
he worked
man.
With Method Man quite a lot.
Yes, and still does.
Yeah.
And The Offspring in this song.
Mm. Yeah.
The big three.
They paid him to literally say three words.
That is just mind-boggling. They could have gotten anyone, and they got Red
Do
Man.
Do you think they could have gotten anyone with this song? Maybe they shot higher and ended up with
They
Red
could
Man.
Have gotten one of the non-singing members of The Offspring to just say it. But instead, they just got in Red Man. And I'm not saying that's like great or not great. Maybe I love that.
It's just a thing that happened.
But it's worth just pointing out. They brought him into the studio. He got up that morning. He made room. He made time. This rapper, this well-regarded rapper at the height of his career, affiliated with the Wu nonetheless, to say original prankster, original yeah.
Wu crew, can you say?
Or no, you don't. They're a clan, Nathan.
No, but
you
I'm saying...
an idiot of yourself.
Is the wider group the crew?
No.
No, okay.
Okay, so this comes at a point post, obviously, Americana, which redefined what The Offspring was. Pre, they were an up-and-coming pop-punk band that had a goofy element to what they were doing, but also some, like, dark and serious songs like Gone Away and Jennifer Lost the War, and which, you know, still played into the pop-punk sound, but, yeah, there was an element of sincerity to what they were doing as well. Whereas the most popular songs from Americana were a song about a honky trying to impress people and a song that ripped off Obladee, Oblada by the Beatles. So you can tell when it came to following up that album, they were just like, oh, you want more of that? Oh, we'll give you more of that. And they leaned all the way in for Conspiracy of One, particularly on this track. It incorporates elements of Lowrider by Low, which you will know as the song, mostly the percussive elements and, yeah, kind of like the driving rhythms of that. It also references the long-standing Rob Schneider in-joke for Adam Sandler movies, where a non sequitur character will turn up at one point and say, "You can do it!"
First in The Waterboy.
In The Waterboy.
2 years previously.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
And then would come up in several movies, including The Animal, which was a Rob Schneider starring movie.
Also, he said it in his own movie?
No. Adam Sandler did it as a return of the favor.
So
there was
funny.
A crowd shot and Adam Sandler turned up and went, "You can do it."
This isn't a sample though, right? This is just someone in the band doing it?
I believe it is.
Sounds like Dexter.
I loved this as a kid because of course I did. It's a goofy, silly song that says Hoochie Mamas and says you can do it like in the movie. It's big and dumb and catchy. In that respect, it succeeds on all fronts. But this is not a song I will ever go back to out of the context of like revisiting Conspiracy of One for nostalgia purposes. But like, if it comes on in a certain context, it's not a song I'll turn off. Like, I won't be like, oh, fuck, get this away from me. Because like, I still have that idea in my head of like 11-year-old me just goofing off and laughing to this song and shit. Coming to it now as, you know, like a 29-year-old, it's just like, oh, yeah, okay, sure, fine. The blow definitely got softened for me considering how much this was a big part of my childhood. So
yeah, I loved it as a kid.
Absolutely with you, David. I've said before, The Offspring, one of the earliest bands I ever truly loved. That love is absolutely colored by nostalgia kind of thing. As you said, this is like part two of their trend where every album they have one song that is a dorky, goofy, over-the-top pop-punk song. That's the lead single and generally doesn't reflect the overall sound of the fucking record. They've been doing it since Americana, like you said, with Pretty Fly.
Yeah.
And they continue it on even today. They're still doing this. They always have like the one, like they have that terrible one from a couple of years ago, that bumping in my truck one.
Oh yeah, that was so bad.
We've mentioned.
Truly one of their worst songs.
You gotta kind of pay it though, right? Like
that's their move.
Because like, it's just like, cool. We're gonna do the thing we want to do, and we're gonna write one song and album that might make it big.
Yeah,
because it has the most sort of crossover potential and whatever. You know,
I can understand choosing catchiness. I can understand choosing that life. But why you gotta be so goddamn obnoxious at the same time,
because
man?
It clearly fucking works, man. They have a formula and it clearly fucking works. Like, this was still popular enough to make it in the 51 100 and be gangbusters and like it sell ridiculous numbers. So in alternative and popular culture, it was still being fucking big. This is clearly
their fucking shtick, and it works. Like,
I guess you play yourself by choosing to be offended by the obnoxiousness of it.
I guess so.
Because you know what I mean? Like, because if you just say, like, yeah, it's obnoxious, and you just lean into it, and you be obnoxious with the song, laugh with it, no harm, no foul. But, oh my God, like, even the way that just listening back to it then, the way that the guitar riff kind of teases at the beginning, and then this, like, the dorky-ass percussion, there's all these little decisions that are just there to get... seemingly, specifically, get under my skin. Targetedly.
Yeah, specifically you.
That's right.
Like, they knew, like, you would discover this song and you would just make your skin crawl.
But at the same time, like, they mentioned a justice of the Supreme Court in the lyrics. Janet Reno.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Like, the Offspring is still smart,
clever.
What
if they've updated it with a Ruth Bader Ginsburg reference?
So, conspiracy...
They say style and aplomb.
Like, aplomb, yeah.
It's just it's a like, good
line. I'd never heard aplomb before. They'll definitely introduce me to that word. So thanks, Offspring.
They're smart guys that are just choosing to lean into obnoxiousness in the furthest possible instance.
Dexter's undeniably smart. He has a PhD.
Yeah.
Like in biology or something.
And you can do it.
Yeah, in him being able to do it. I loved it so much as a kid that it's hard for me to say it's crap because I loved it so it gave me so much joy as a 12-year-old.
You can love something and still acknowledge that it's crap.
Yeah, and it probably is.
Yeah, it is.
We do that all the time.
I love the video so much as a kid too.
Same.
Because all the pranks in it, you're like, oh my God, it's so funny.
But
not
look,
funny.
Let's describe these four pranks that he pulls. The first one, he puts shit on a sandwich and his dad eats it. Second one... he uses a Bunsen burner to burn the face of a teacher who's being a pervert to a student, and a high school student, so presumably an underage girl. After that, he takes a he talks to these two fellow students who are actually the principal's office, and then they go in there, and then he takes a photo of them, like, and they're topless, and the teacher's in a compromising position. And the last one, he shuts down the security grid to the whole city. Two of those are objectively, it's absolutely okay to burn the face of someone being a pervert on a young girl. Like, that's not a prank. That's a just punishment. And
that's a Batman move.
Yeah.
That's being a vigilante.
Yeah. And then taking a photo of a principal committing fucking sexual assault on two underage girls, again, is not a prank. It's justice.
Yeah.
But he set that up, though, to get rid of the principal.
Well.
Look, I know entrapment laws are what they are. And like it's like a cop legally can't be like, hey man, I've got like a kilo of cocaine, I'll give it to you for $1.50. And they're like, aha, you bought drugs, now I'm arresting you. Cops can't do that. But like the idea of like if you're so easily compromised that all it takes is two teenage girls in your office taking their tops off for you to like be like fucking Limburger from the Biker Mice from Mars and be all like arms around them all molesty kind of thing. If that's all it takes, then you deserve to be punished for that as well. Like
if he asked, is this a prank? Legally, they had to tell
him. They had to say yes. Yeah. So again, so two of them are fine. And shutting down the power to the city, it depends how like jokerized you are, but it could be seen as very cool. The only one that's an actual
jokerized.
Prank. Yeah, the
oh
only one that's
God.
An actual prank is the shit sandwich, which... admittedly, that would bum me out if my son fed me poops. Like,
yeah.
Do you know about the truly bonkers marketing idea that came along before Conspiracy of One?
No.
And specifically in relation to this track.
Oh, yeah. I remember this.
All right. This track was distributed for free as a MP3 on their website.
Remember MP3s?
People are starting to hear about this internet thing. We got a Napster going on at the moment. Like, we're starting to get on board with the digital distribution of music. But there was a competition held where $1 million was randomly awarded to someone who downloaded the song.
That is insane.
That's insanity. That's such a huge prize for just downloading a song for free, which is already like
pretty easy.
Pretty good. You're distributing your obnoxious material virally in the best of ways.
Yeah.
Like, no wonder this song was kind of everywhere. Now, the band actually... planned to make the whole album free as a download as well, but they couldn't do it because of contractual obligations. But man, they would have beaten so many other bands that were applauded for that same move.
Could you imagine if
many years
like,
after?
Yeah, could you imagine if quote unquote doing Anne in Rainbows was doing a Conspiracy of One?
Yes.
It could almost have been, right?
Yeah, man. Amazing.
Absolutely bizarre.
Game changers.
Conspiracy of One is probably my most listened to Offspring album because it's the one I got into the Offspring.
Yeah.
But I definitely skip this song every time.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's some great tracks on that
record.
There's
some fucking killer really, tracks
really
on
good.
It, man.
Even in terms of singles, Want You Bad, great song.
Fucking tune. Banger. Oh, yeah. Man.
Swap that out for this. Yeah. You got yourself a good countdown.
Mm. Yeah, fucking A.
But I know, I can see why people, like, with the nostalgia and with the fact that it is just, like, there are very few songs that quite embody this level of obnoxiousness.
Yeah.
And there's something about that. Like, again, if you choose to align yourself with it, I can see how you can have an absolute ball of a time, but... God, I don't know whether I have that choice in me when it comes to listening to this track.
Also, yeah, no. The idea of someone being rich because they won $1 million for downloading this song is just
terrific.
Quintessential America. Like, that's what America is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With the hindsight of time and the benefit of not having to listen to this song, I can kind of pay them for being like, you know what? We're going to do a stupid song and get a lot of money, and the rest of the album is going to be good stuff.
Yeah. I don't like my work.
That brings us to the end of yet another episode of Hottest 100s and Thousands, and officially halfway, finally, through season motherfucking 8 and the 2000 Hottest 100. Holy shit, people. The Bon Jovi point has arrived. Thank you for listening. Fuck, we love you and we appreciate you, and we promise not to pull any epic pranks on you this time.
The clown prince of prank. The Jester.
Batman's all like, damn it, Jester!
Before we get out of here, we're picking our favourites and our least favourites and continuing the ever-continuing story of Carry Over Champ and Carry Over Chump. My new champ, best song of the week has to be R.E.M. The Great Beyond. And least favourite, I am going to give it to Sucker by 28 Days, even though, I get that it's of its time and et cetera, but yeah, just not for me. But yeah, not my new champ.
My favorite is also R.E.M., The Great Beyond. Terrific, terrific tune by a terrific band. My champ, however, does remain Fiona Apple. My least favorite is 28 Days Later's Sucker as well, David, but it's nowhere near my new chump of the fucking Black Jesus song.
Black Jesus!
My favorite is their R.E.M. as well, but I'll hold on to Fiona Apple. There's three stinkers here, so this is like not happened for a little while. I think I want to say my least favorite is the Hippos, but I will keep MXPX as my chump.
Yeah, I'm just upset this happened. The Great Beyond is an amazing, amazing song. Easy favorite. My least favorite is going to be Original Prankster. Everlast is remaining, but I'm very tempted to make R.E.M. champ because I think it's a really wonderful song, but I think I'm going to retain something for Kate just for a little while longer.
Yeah, good call, good call. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, etc. Get in touch if you are feeling the vibes. If you have any thoughts, corrections... anything like that, would absolutely love to hear from you. Please, please keep in touch. On behalf of Mr. Nathan Harrison. Mr. Andrew McDonald.
Also, yeah.
And Mr. Adam Buncher.
Also, yeah.
My name is David James Young. Everything is original.